and you've got me for just under 60 minutes. And on today's show, we've got a wake-up call. Today I'm chatting with singer-songwriter Tyson Ray Borsboom. Tyson was born in Winnipeg, but he was shaped by Alberta between Lethbridge and Calgary, and he's now living out on the West Coast in Vancouver. His thoughtful blend of country folk and Americana feels built for long drives, which he's done his fair share of, driving trucks, and late-night reflection, which, frankly, with a couple kids at home, I'm rather partial to. In today's chat, we get into everything from being inspired by Canadian Idol as a teenager to falling in love and proposing to his fiancée Charlotte along Vancouver's seawall at sunset, where, rudely, no one seemed to care. Except for Charlotte. He tells us the story. We also get into his complicated relationship with co-writing and the way collaborative songwriting can feel a little bit like therapy, even while part of him wonders if asking for help is somehow cheating. His new album, These Days, comes out June 5th, and he's about to head out on a 30-day Canadian tour in support of it. We chat about the album and play songs from it. Here's my chat with Tyson Ray Borsboom. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent.
I don't know if I've ever heard it before, like right before the... as soon as you got in, it was like announced to the world, this is being recorded. And I was like, I've never heard that before.
It's being recorded forever and ever. Amen. Yeah. You know, this will never disappear, Tyson. So
for sure.
I just want you to tense up. Okay. And just really, really overthink everything. Well,
watch what I say. Everything's forever.
That's what I mean. Ain't it just, how's it going, man? Where are you in, you at home outside of Van City these days?
Yeah. We're just, in Coquitlam. I kind of live like right in the corner.
Great. You happy there?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I mean, honestly, it's been a big transition from Calgary. I think that, besides the rain and stuff, I mean, honestly, a lot of different places. I mean, I was born in Winnipeg, but I didn't really get the opportunity to like grow up there. But obviously the winters there, like super harsh and stuff. I mean, Calgary, the winters are pretty bad too. But I think just like the dreariness of the winter is something that I was looking forward to. But I like pinned it up in my head that it was going to be so bad. And then we got sunshine. Like every 3 weeks was honestly... fine.
Okay, easy with this. We got sunshine through the winter. All right, man.
Everybody was telling me that it was going to be like 4 months of cloud. And I was like, I don't know if I'm prepared for that, but I did prepare myself for it. And then it was fine.
So you're a stronger person for having prepared yourself for it, and you're getting better winters. Yeah. So like, it's win-win here, man.
Where are you?
Right now, I'm in Montreal, as you might be able to see over my shoulder. This apartment I'm staying in has a poster of the city I'm staying in, so I can see the city when I look inside the apartment, and I can see the city when I look outside the apartment. It's a pretty cool system they got set up here in Montreal. So I'm here for a few more weeks, yeah.
Oh, okay. I've never been to Montreal. I'm like... begging to go. I've heard such great things.
Oh yeah. I mean, I spent quite a few years here. I live in Dartmouth now. I'm on the East Coast with your buddy Daniel James McFadden.
Oh, okay,
I mean,
amazing.
I don't live with Daniel, but we're both out there. Transplants from cities further west than Halifax. Yeah. Mm. So you were born in Winnipeg. You said you didn't really grow up there. When I was born in Calgary, but I didn't really grow up there. I moved every few years. So what happened? You were born in Winnipeg, and then you, like, little by little, you've kept heading west.
Yeah. Yeah. So born in Winnipeg, dad got like work opportunity in Alberta, like early 2000s. So I think I was like 8 years old and we moved to Alberta. So pretty much grew up in like Southern Alberta. Okay. I don't know if you know a small town like Lethbridge.
Of course. Yeah. It's not that small, right?
Well, I went to high school in Coaldale, which is even smaller, like a little bit east from there. And then, did most of my growing up in Lethbridge, and then my now fiance lived in Calgary, so we were doing long distance for a while there. But I had a good buddy who had a really nice phrase that he set up for me that was, I was living in Calgary, but I was sleeping in Lethbridge.
Yeah, I get
so that. I thought that was really funny, because I was playing so many shows in Calgary, and I was up there so often for like the relationship and just like for opportunities and stuff like that. So I was in Calgary so much that even probably like 2 or 3 years that I wasn't living in Calgary, for all intents and purposes, I was there so much. Right. Moved up there for a year with Charlotte, my fiance, and then she got work out here just outside of Vancouver. Mm. Just April, we moved May last year, so we're coming up on a year now that we've been in BC. So
how long have you been engaged?
We got engaged when we were here looking for apartments. So I think the anniversary is actually this weekend.
Tyson, you better not think it. You better know it, man. Come on. Like I said off the top, this is forever.
I don't think the proposal day, I don't think that's a day that needs to be remembered, is it? But it's in my calendar regardless. Okay. In my calendar. I mean,
all right. If you put it in your calendar, you've done what you need to do. You've done your due diligence. You're fine. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to talk about with the proposal? I'm always curious about that. You can say.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was so when we were in Calgary, I think I was planning a little like mountain getaway and didn't want to like script it too much. Just wanted it to kind of be off the cuff and just find like a special moment. And then when she got the news that she was accepted for the position here in Vancouver, we kind of had to like on the fly change everything and come out to Vancouver to look for apartments and a place to live. So as soon as I transitioned, for whatever reason, like she knew that I had the ring and she'd been kind of waiting for me to propose for a while at that point.
Oh, okay.
By the time like she kind of knew that the mountain getaway was going to be a proposal, but for whatever reason, when I transitioned to going to Vancouver, just like left her mind completely, which doesn't really make sense because Vancouver's like a beautiful place to propose. You know what I mean? So,
and to hike, one might say.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I thought that was great, but it worked. It bode really well for me. So we have some friends here and we were like doing the house shopping and then going for dinner. So he kind of, friend Seth just helped me kind of like plan some stuff and he knew a really good restaurant along the seawall, so we just went and like did the seawall for sunset and just nervously tried to find a spot and then a bench along the seawall, you know, perfect timing. Somebody got up and left right as we were walking up, so sat down for a while and then Seth was doing some, you know, picture taking, whatever, and oh, it was our turn and then just pop the question. But it was funny that it was in very epically Vancouver fashion that just like nobody cared.
Except for Charlotte, hopefully.
I was down on one knee and I was doing the whole proposal thing. Everybody was walking by. Not that I need the attention or anything like that, but it was just very funny that not a single look, no photos, no videos, nobody thought it was cute. Just like everybody was like, whatever. They don't care at all.
Nah, I mean, these days, what you got to like jump from a hot air balloon or something and
I think so. Yeah,
spray it in the air as you're going down to get anyone to pay attention to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's really beautiful, man. So you got down on one, you got down on the knee.
I don't really think that much came out. I was pretty like nervous and scared. I think the only thing that I really remember really formulating of a sentence was in like the months prior, she was kind of like bugging me about it. And her like joke was that she wanted her present. Every day she would ask me like, can I have my present? Like, I want my
That's
present
funny.
Today. So
That's
I just like whispered in her ear, like, do you want your present? And then she was like, oh, what? Like right now? And I was like, right now.
And then you got on a knee.
Yeah, I got on her knee.
The present. Oh, that's really beautiful, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
That's nice. Great.
Yeah.
How did you and Charlotte meet?
So when I was down in Lethbridge, she was down there opening a restaurant and my roommate at the time was her boss. So I would go in all the time to visit him and she was like a...
to visit him.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
So I took a liking to her right away. She was someone that like definitely caught my eye, but she was in a long-term relationship. She had a boyfriend of like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years at the time. So that was off, you know, off limits. I wouldn't cross that boundary. So I actually ended up dating her roommate for like a couple of weeks.
Oh man.
Of course that's the way that it works.
Yeah.
When I was seeing her roommate, she would like come in with her roommate like at like the bar that I was working at or something and just like come in for cocktails or something. And her friend was very shy, so like me and Charlotte would end up doing like a lot of the talking when they would come in anyways. And I was like,
okay,
oh, like, no, like this girl's really cool. We have like, you know, music stuff and interest like in common. And you know, we both like the outdoors and like hiking. And like, she just, it was great conversation. So it was like sad. Like I found myself sitting in this situation, like at the bar being like, I'm seeing this girl and I'm like really into this girl, but like, obviously she has a boyfriend. So I was like really torn about it. Uh-huh. That like, you know, relationship with her roommate fizzled out relatively fast. And she was on my mind for like a long time. She went back to Calgary, just obviously realizing that like things wouldn't happen. It just kind of like eventually kind of fell out. And then it was in my mind, it was like 2 years later, but she was saying that it was like a year, maybe just over a year. We crossed paths on a hike in Kananaskis. We were both doing Larch Valley, and I knew some of the friends that she was hiking with. So we kind of stopped to say hi and reconnected. And then I probably did like an Instagram DM or something like that, you know, just to see how she was or how things were going. And it kind of slipped out that she wasn't seeing her boyfriend anymore. And kind of the rest is history. I took her to,
The rest is the future.
The rest is the future. Yeah. It was, our first date was Lilac Fest, which I really love.
Was what fest?
It's called Lilac Fest. It's like the summer music festival in Calgary. It's right down like on 8th Street. It's so great. I think they have like hundreds of thousands of people come.
Holy moly.
When we left Calgary, I actually ended up playing that year. So it was a really nice, like full circle. It was like the day we left, I like played Lilac Fest, and then we loaded up the vehicle and left to go to Vancouver. So it was,
oh wow.
Yeah. It was very serendipitous, I guess.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You were going to propose on that hiking trail in Kananaskis is what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Right when we met. Okay. Yeah. That was actually, yeah, that was a really big, and then I think that I like had mentioned the idea to her, and I think she like, I don't know, it was something about like the cheesiness of it, or she's like, well, you're not going to do that, obviously. And I was like, oh, definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. No, that wasn't, I wouldn't have done. No, I wouldn't have done.
Let's take a quick break in the relationship chatter part of When We Wake and play some music. My guest today is Tyson Ray Borsboom. He's got a new album, June 5th. From it, this is Exit Sign. More of our chat afterwards. It's on, you gotta learn the hard way. Sitting there on the edge of the storm.
What's it gonna take to change the way you live your life? Like an older pine, you went home for miles. You never took the time to turn around and realize. You used the end this time. Give me one more life. What's it gonna take?
his forthcoming album, These Days, due June 5th. That is Tyson Ray Borsboom with Exit Sign. Tyson is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake.
I read that you said you started songwriting after watching a Canadian Idol competition talk to me about that. What happened? What year? Who was on it? What did it do to you?
That's a deep cut. I love that. So I think I was playing guitar from, you know, like 13 to like 16 ish. And then, you know, the friend group that I was in, they kind of started to fizzle out with the guitar playing. So just like, the friend groups are just like, I don't know if it, you know, wasn't cool anymore or whatever, you know, the stupid social perception that everybody cares about in like middle school and high school. And
does it end there, Tyson? Does it really end at high school?
What? I'm trying so hard, and I think I'm like finally grasping a little bit of like caring less what people think, but it's so difficult.
Excellent.
It's so difficult. And I kind of stopped playing guitar, and then probably like a year had passed, and, you know, just watching like American Idol, Canadian Idol with like, you know, mom or dad or whatever. And I believe it was Theo Tams that was a finalist, or he might have actually ended up winning that year. He was from Coaldale, like my hometown that I grew up in. And I think the song was Collide. Was it Howie?
Oh, Howie Day.
Yeah, Collide.
Yeah.
And like that kind of like sparked, and I like started kind of like humming it to myself. And then, you know, I obviously knew how to play guitar, so I was like, oh, okay. So I picked it back up, and it's so funny, you know, like being like somewhat of a seasoned, you know, songwriter and singer now, the difficulty of like when you're first starting, like grasping the words to guitar, making that brain connection, months, you know what I mean? Like months just to learn like one song. I'm so glad that I did. Like that was a moment when I kind of like picked it back up, and then you're like singing, you know, closet singing for months, years. I remember like learning like Boulevard of Broken Dreams and trying to sing it, you know, like Green Day, and, you know, I'm in like my dad's camper, and I'm like, and nobody can be in the trailer right now. I'm practicing my singing. Everybody go like 50 feet away.
Yeah. And plug yours, by the way, also.
Yeah. But no, that was like funny. That was kind of, yeah, my first experience with.
So you're like 15, 16 at that point?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're bashing out Green Day, you're bashing out the Chili's and Tragically Hip as well. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Tragically Hip, huge like Kings of Leon fan. I don't really think it was like in my range at the time, but I was trying like so hard to sing like Pyro and some of those like, you know, mid 2000s OGs, which are like an incredibly difficult range. Thinking back,
right?
Yeah, we would do like the Garage Band thing, and we were singing like. Glorious Sons has been a big band on my radar from like way back when, and the Strokes. Like I was big into the like alternative rock kind of back then, and then kind of started to move more into like the more songwriting stuff. I mean, obviously starting with like Collide. I mean, that was kind of you know, my musical influences from back when. But I've always, you know, liked an eclectic mix.
Where does the country influence come from?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that. There was like a time when I feel like I got into country for like a couple of years, and I was like, no, I hate country. And then I got into country, and I remember in like high school, or it was like university, and a friend was like, well, like country's for like the summertime. And I thought that was such a funny, like reference point. Like, oh no, I only listen to country in the summertime. And I was like,
in the summer. Yeah, sure.
That doesn't really make sense to me. But I think just like the seasonality of it, I thought was like an interesting concept. So I was like, oh, okay, well me, you know, maybe leaving the genre for like a year or two and then coming back. Maybe that was just my like seasonality of it.
I like that. If country is summer, what's winter?
I think like an alternative rock, honestly.
Okay. I like this. Let's just go through it. What's spring for you?
Spring obviously feels folky, but I know fall is folky though.
Okay, great. And so we're left with fall. We're saying autumn, the fall is folky, and spring is,
I don't know,
to be determined.
Yeah, to be determined.
Right. Notably absent is jazz.
Yes, I feel like the spring, the bluesy, jazzy, I think would make sense there.
Okay, great. They're your seasons. I really dig that. So you gave yourself permission to sort of vacation a little bit with country music.
Yeah,
I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to an all inclusive, but you know, I will be back again, and I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that the country. I'm not sure. I wouldn't say like everybody, but I think that like a lot of people at one time in their life is like listening to like the pop country, unless that's just like your genre. If that's your genre, then that's awesome. But like,
right.
I think the most recent time that I've like come back and then like settled into it more was when I found the more like singer-songwriter side of country.
Yeah.
I mean, even like Taylor Swift, not her most recent record, but like the Folklore album. And like when she started doing songwriting and stuff with like the national team and like Bon Iver, yeah. I was like, as soon as I saw her like collaborating with those teams, I saw the songwriting be different, like in, like not in that pop country genre. And I loved it. I loved it. Like those records to me are super great.
What changed for you in the songwriting? Mm-hmm. Can you articulate it? Because I hear it too, but how do you articulate the change for you that made you go, I like this now?
I think that I'm not sure if it's in the songwriting. I think it's honestly in the production side of it that it has less pop.
Yeah, I wondered.
Yeah. I mean, getting more into like the singer-songwriter side, like finding like the Tyler Childers, the Colter Walls. I mean, sure. It's up for debate whether like a Zach Bryan is a pop country or not. I mean, I've heard in like lots of interviews and stuff, him saying that he doesn't even like being called country. I mean, he's like a, you know, a songwriter or like a folk singer.
I mean, definitely sits outside the mold mm-hmm. of pop mm-hmm. country. Yeah. Like, he's embraced by, you know.
Yeah. Like I'm a huge Zach Bryan fan. I mean, honestly, I mean, his songwriting, I would like to say is pretty undeniable. I mean, the lyrics that he writes and stuff are pretty prolific. But as soon as mm-hmm. I started to like get into that more, I would like to call it like the like alt country or like country songwriter, I guess. I mean, obviously they're all songwriters, but does that make sense? That kind of like generality to be more on like the folk presence. I started to see some of the lyricism and like some of the production that I did really like, and like super drawn to the pedal steel and like some of the mm-hmm. more like twangy poppy or like boppy guitar. I mean, some like guitar riffs that me and like the band like to talk about are like, do you know the artist Skinny Dick?
Yeah, you're wearing your shirt, aren't you?
Yeah, man.
I can see Skinny. I figured it was Skinny Dick. I put Skinny on the show.
The like guitar tone that him and his band have are something that we like love so much. The Skinnies, the Mario Buckleys, like that type of mm-hmm, poem, mm-hmm. that, you know, folk singer-songwriter side of country is something mm-hmm. that I love. So as soon as I started to kind of like embrace that, I feel like I really started to like come into my own and then kind of have that genre blending. And I really want to try to stay not necessarily 50-50. I mean, whatever comes out is whatever comes out, but just mm-hmm. have that really nice blend of, you know, alt country, Americana, folk singer-songwriter kind of stay in this like half pie, or I don't know what the three circles thing is called.
I feel the Venn diagram.
The Venn diagram. You got the country, the folk, and then like a singer songwriter.
Totally. Well, you got your three seasons basically. Yeah. You got your spring, summer, fall.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this one feels particularly autumnal to me. From his forthcoming album, These Days. This is Tyson Ray Borsboom with Learning Slow. More of our chat after this.
Some bleeds hair, tracking in the dirt, keeping daisies in the pocket of your shirt, spinning wheels, you're casting shadows on the wall. Learning slow or not at all. Maybe I've been burdened by something I never had. I'm not the sharpest tool, you take me by my hand. Will it go the distance, or will it be the wind I fall? Learning slow, not at all. Maybe through the glass, I could see the you and me. Who stands in the rear view? All the circles that I need. Stand in your shoes, but I ain't afraid to crawl. Learning slow, not at all. Learning slow, not at all. Tracking in the dirt, picking lilies when you're feeling at your worst. Skipping stones when you turn down my wall. Learning slow or not at all. Learning slow.
Learning Slow, from his forthcoming album These Days, due June 5th. That is Tyson Ray Borsboom. Tyson is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake.
Coming from Calgary, I think that, like, you know, I reference like missing Calgary and friends and stuff, but I think that I was just kind of falling into this, you know, group there of you know, amazing, prolific songwriters and bandmates, and then kind of, you know, fell into this move, which, making the most of like Vancouver, and honestly been doing songwriting here and like found such an amazing community, but still kind of finding myself missing Michael Bernard Fitzgerald, who's like a little bit of my mentor. I feel like manager would be in a very loose unofficial sense, but mentor for sure. He started a collective there called Pocono House. And I feel like it's not super well known. I mean, maybe in Calgary a little bit, if you know, you know. But I think he's trying to curate, you know, I'm sure you're very familiar with the, like, amazing community in Winnipeg.
Oh, my goodness. Just, I mean, it's wild.
Crazy, going on crazy. And just
totally
very, like, beautifully in incestuous, where they're all just on each other's projects, sure, and writing with each other and producing. So Michael, like, I think that there is so many amazing songwriters and amazing musicians in Calgary, but maybe not like collaborating with each other and being in the same space at the same time. So he started Pocono House, which was originally in his house. Like, I think he moved in with his now partner, and instead of like selling the old place or renting it out, he made like a studio production, like creative space.
Wow.
So it was very small at the time, only like three or four rooms, different studios in each room. We'd all like rent to different rooms, get together for like songwriting. If you need somebody to like play bass on your record, okay, well, buddy's in this room. Okay, you need like a producer, well, this guy's in this room. Oh, you need keys, you know, she's in this room. So it was like a space too. And then we're all in this group chat. So like, you need somebody to like play on this, or you need an instrumentalist for a gig. They're all like in this community, and now it's grown, and we have a space, or Michael has a space downtown in Calgary. And I think there's like 10 or 12 rooms now. So there's like two or three people in all the different rooms, studio equipment, songwriting space. And it's just amazing. It's like where I met the whole band, like, you know, Nick, Jesse, Phoenix, my producer, everybody's there, like Taylor, who came on tour with me for a while. Yeah. amazing musician. Like it was, I just felt so lucky that they were just sitting in the palm of my hand in this space, this collective that I was so lucky to be a part of.
You miss it, eh?
I've written some songs lately. I think it was like in the wintertime, you know, having a sad cloudy day and Charlotte's gone or something like that. And it's definitely good for songwriting. I will say that the cloudy dearness.
I get that.
Yeah. I mean, I get to go back. My day job like pulls me back to Alberta, you know, somewhat often. So I get to see that crew, and then, you know, when I'm back, you know, get some studio time and stuff like that. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be like a forever thing. It's kind of like with Charlotte's work, whether we're going to be in Vancouver long term or not. I think that there's definitely a side of us who wants to end up back in Calgary. But you never really know what the future holds. So
where does that leave you in terms of like the way you talk about Calgary, mm-hmm. And your time there? You were deeply embedded in a community.
Yeah.
And you know, you still, when you're referring to the Pocono House, you're still saying we.
Yeah.
And then you caught yourself.
Yeah.
You're still part of it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So
for sure.
Where does that leave you in Vancouver currently about how deep into the community you try to go? Are you sort of untethered and you'll let yourself go, or are you sort of like hedging your bets internally?
I think that the way that I'm approaching it is that I feel like I have a good base in Calgary. You know, I have like a good fan base, but also a good like friend base and musician base. So I'm just trying to build what I built in Calgary in Vancouver. You know, I think that like the goal long term, I've kind of always said in like my one song Coast to Coast, there's like a line in there, and it's just like, I just want like 100 people to come to a show in like every major city across Canada. It's not the ceiling. I don't want it to say that it's the ceiling, but it's like, I feel like it's an attainable, I feel like it's an achievable goal for me. And like,
yeah,
$20 ticket, maybe 25, like max, that pays that like hotels, you pay for the band. You probably still have to be independent at that point. If you got like, you know, you got to spread that money around
totally.
You know, pretty fast, but 100 people across Canada is just like, yeah, that's my achievable dream, if you will. So
that's a great floor.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's a great floor.
Yeah. I think, and it's just like a 100 room also is just like, I think it's great. I love I love those rooms. If you can fill those rooms, you know, like the Royal and yeah. Nelson or something like that, like just one of my favorite rooms. It's great. Just trying to like build that community in Calgary, you know, songwriters, fans, just like really diving into the community. I wouldn't call it like tethered. I'm literally just trying to, I mean, there's so many amazing songwriters here as well. So I think just trying to like build that community. I mean, so many people that I know in Vancouver know those Calgary people. Those Calgary people know those Vancouver people. Oh, I just sure. kind of see it as me extending my reach, getting new fans, meeting new people, and just kind of continuing the like Canadian growth, if you will. Yeah.
Have you met the people in Vancouver that you can go into co-writes with?
I honestly haven't done like a ton of co-writes. This last record was kind of the first time. Like, you know, Jesse, me and him did Exit Sign. Colin, me and him did a few songs. And then I was lucky enough to do a couple songs with Josh. That's like the most recent time. So I think as I would probably spent, you know, 3 years building that community before I actually got around to doing any songwriting. So I think Vancouver's kind of going to be somewhat the same.
Right.
Definitely trying to branch out, do some more songwriting. I don't know why I think that collaborative songwriting is so great, but I think that I'm like hard on myself in a sense that I have a little bit of a negative stigma on doing the collaborative songwrites. Cause I'm like, am I like cheating? Like, am I not being hard enough on myself to say like, no, you can do that yourself. Or like, you know, are you leaning on other artists too much? And I know that that's probably not a good view to have. Like, you're just collaborating, like two minds are better than one. You know what I mean? But it's an interesting concept of like, where would have the song been, or like where would have the song went if it was, you know, you wrote it yourself or something. So it's just like a funny like push and pull, I guess, in my brain.
Yeah. How do you decide when to embark on a co-write, or, you know, what song to bring into a co-write?
Totally. I think that when you have the idea for a song, a writer can like come to mind. Like I was kind of like an idea came to mind and instantly like Colin Carbonara came up in my mind. So I have like a big notes page with like song ideas and kind of like a song or like a voice memo where the song stemmed from, and then kind of like the lyrical ideas or maybe like a hook or something like that. And then if there's like a songwriter or a friend that I have in mind, I'll kind of like footnote them on it. But usually the reference point is like just honestly the time. Like if you're like happen to be seeing that friend, something that I really like to do is when Sweet Montana got written, there's a song of my last record, if you've heard, but it was very early on the Kono days, and I was with Phoenix and I wanted to do some co-writing, and I just gave him like my notes app, and I was just like, scroll through, and you know, whenever you see like an idea or like a voice memo or something that just like catches your eye, then just let me know and we'll just like riff off that. And it was Sweet Montana, which was like a motorcycling, doing trips with my dad, kind of like exploration, freedom type song. And it was super easy. Like he somehow had this like guitar riff that just instantly came out, and then the lines came out super. It's only like a 2.5 minute song, so it was, you know, not super lyrically jam packed. But I feel like we wrote that song in like 25 minutes.
The open road, smell of pine, 47 Chevy, never enough time. Back got home, but we made it fine. Sweet Montana, feeling free, never stop breaking the rule, laughing it off. Thought we'd never see that mountain top.
From his 2025 self-titled release, I guess you could say, TRB, that is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Tyson Ray Borsboom with Sweet Montana. Now back to our chat. I've read you refer to co-writing as the most magical, beautiful experiences. I'm wondering, that experience with Sweet Montana, is that one of those experiences with Phoenix that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that probably when I reference that, is that with Jesse more specifically, with Colin more specifically, not really with Phoenix as much, but those two, you know, buddies, friends, are really good listeners. They're really good listeners. So I think that as much as songwriting is therapeutic, you can, you know, reference it as a bit of a therapy session. So I think that's kind of what I was referencing with that line, in a sense that I honestly, I've been meaning to like go to therapy, and I feel like everybody should go to therapy. I feel like it's probably the greatest thing ever, whether it's like a financial constraint or like insurance or what the situation is. I haven't gotten around to going since I was like a young man, and I want to be so bad. So I think that where that line comes from is the fact that I had these like beautiful therapy sessions with friends of mine, where I was able to just like puke out these ideas and these feelings that were on my chest and be able to work them through into this song, which feels so great. Feels great to like get it off your chest, if you will, but also just to like talk it through, whether it's you're validating your feelings or finding those comparison points or like coming to a solution, if you will, of this like idea or feeling that's in your head. So
that's really interesting, and it sits in not contradiction, but like in tension, in conflict with what you referenced earlier, which is this feeling that you struggle that with respect to co-writing, that you struggle with the idea that it's taking the easy way out by having someone else help you finish. Those two concepts seem contradictory to each other.
Yeah, and that's exactly the push and pull that I deal with when.
Right.
I think that I need to let go of the concept that I'm not cheating the right, but just like cheating myself by being. I think that as long as I'm flexing that muscle, I think that that feeling comes from sessions when I maybe feel like I haven't contributed as much as I could. With Colin, for example, I feel like is the example that I'm like maybe referencing, is I will be like, okay, this is what I want to write about. Here's all my feelings. I'll, you know, give him like the 30-minute speech, and then we'll kind of have the lines, and then he'll just like put together these like beautiful metaphors. Like Learning Slow was one of those songs where I just like, here's all my emotions, the feelings. So I would feel like I maybe didn't contribute to the song as much as I could, as much as I would have liked lyrically line by line, but like feelings and like where the root of the song came from was completely from me. But because I wasn't like actually being like, oh, here's the line. Oh, here's the line. Oh, here's the line. I'm like, oh, like, sure. Am I not doing enough? Like, could I be doing more? Like, should have I, you know, maybe taken a stab at that earlier? Maybe just giving myself some grace and just realizing that that is what songwriting is. There is a push and pull. And like sometimes you're the heart and sometimes you're the lyricist. It's, you know, you're contributing one way or another. It's not always the same. Every songwriting session, every, you know, lyricist or artist that you work with, it's always going to be different.
Well, there you go. Like I was going to say, maybe give yourself the grace because there is no one way to write a song. It's not that that's what songwriting is. It's because there's no one way to write a song. You're hard on yourself, hey?
I would like to think quite hard on myself. Yeah.
Why would you like to think that? You gotta lighten up on yourself, Tyson.
I don't know.
Maybe you don't have to. Don't take it from me. Be hard on yourself.
Yeah. The conversation of like, is it enough versus like giving yourself credit? You know, really taking a second to like pause and like be in that moment is hard. I feel like it is hard for me, because there is a bit of a what's next. And I would like to think that a lot of people in society like deal with that issue. But yeah, I really do try to remember to stop and smell the roses more these days, because I feel like all those quotes and like they're, you know, TikTok and Instagram or whatever, the point of like, hey, just like take a second to like pause and like appreciate where you are, because like this is where you were like battling to be like 5 years ago or 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like give yourself some grace and some thanks and some appreciation, because like you've worked hard to be here. Need to pause and be grateful more often. And I'm definitely trying. I feel like I am getting better at that.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about Trucker Seat. It feels like that song maybe sits there.
For sure. Yeah. Trucker Seat was a song that I honestly wasn't sure was going to make the record. I got a critique way back when that lives just rent free in my mind.
Bastard.
Tell Me on the last record was written like a long, long time ago. And I got a review one time on it, and it's a longer song. It's like 4 minutes, 50 or like 520 or something like that. Tell Me. And basically this review was like, who do you think you are? Like, it just drones on forever. Like, this is the longest song I've ever heard. So I'm like, oh no, like, don't make long songs. Like, songs aren't allowed to be long. But even when I tried to revisit Tell Me, I was like, every lyric, every line meant something to me and was like getting to the point of what I was trying to achieve in the end of the song. So like, there's nothing that I can do in this song besides like take out the last chorus, but that just, you know, I can't do that. I can't go like bridge into end.
For one person that you don't know.
Yeah, caring too much. That was when I was at the peak pinnacle of caring the reviews and everything.
Did that finally get you over the hump, or were you still that review? Like, it, obviously, I know about reviews. I hear you. I feel you. How did you then proceed from reading, hearing?
Yeah, reading. Yeah. Read it? I think that it was still on my mind, and then I was playing a show. It was one of my first shows here in Vancouver, and I was still kind of like test rolling, trucker seat, and. Just like a random fan just like stumbled into the show, came up afterwards and was like so complimentive and was like, man, that like second last song you sang, like that's the one, man. That's a good one. I was like, really? Like tell me about it. Cause it's such a slow build and like very lyric heavy, you know, it doesn't really ever having a super big part of it that really hits. It's just like, it's very conceptual and like leading somewhere the whole time. And it has like a bit of a big finish, but like, I was very interested for him to be like, oh, like that's the one. And I was like, oh, like it's so long though. And he's like, no, who cares about it? So
we don't care about the length.
Yeah.
We really don't. What we care about is the feeling we're getting listening. I think that I'm with that person. I think that song's so beautiful. I mean, talking about the conflict of being a songwriter, it feels like is embedded.
Yeah. So Trucker Seat's really great for me. I mean, I think that it's just like the whole concept of like life and love and like where it's leading you and just like wanting to be on the right path and like not wanting to make those sacrifices for the wrong reasons. Trucker Seat's. Yeah, I mean, at its very core, my day job, I do like marketing, and for a while, I was driving truck. I was driving truck, and a phrase that like lives in my mind is this conversation that I had with my dad. The company that I have during the day, work with my dad, and I was doing some like night bartending at the time, and. This conversation, he like came in, he was like leaning over the bar, and he's like, Tyson, this is a big opportunity. Like, there's a lot of money to be made here. Like, you know, you put your nose to the grindstone, like this could really pan out for you. And I just remember responding, just saying like, I don't care. I'm not saying that I'm going to quit it. I will like, I will stick with it, and I will like do what needs to be done. But it's not the goal. It's not the goal. Like, I don't care about the money. I understand that money is like something that makes the world go around and like I need it, but I would so rather be poor and be a songwriter and like be out on the road and like be loving my life. Like, being on stage, like I love songwriting, but like being on stage and like that feeling, it is so great. Like I literally just live for it. Like, I love being on tour. I think that it's so great. The smiles, the emotions, everybody's having a great time. It's just like such a good vibe. So just like chasing that feeling and like chasing that dream, you know, my relationship with my dad has always been like a push and pull. So I would say I'm like proud of myself in that moment to just be like, no.
Well, I'm proud of you too, Tyson. From Tyson Ray Borsboom's forthcoming album, These Days, here's a standout track for me. And it's a long one. I love it. It's Trucker Seat on When We Wake.
Well, I get up early and I don't stay up late. Got too many things, can't afford to think straight. It's $1.40 and it keeps on going up. Someone tell me how to afford all this stuff. Got one in the house, want to eventually. Don't get me started. Don't get me wrong. I said it's all right. I just worry about being her perfect white knight. I make enough money. I make her laugh. There's so many things I just want her to have. So I put pen to paper when fingers on a board. Instead of keep on singing stages and hammering those chords. But in the meantime, I won't stop the earth. Old-fashioned way, but I'd rather pour my heart out all across that stage. Still burning the candle, just not for too long, 'cause I got big plans and I gotta prove them wrong. They're the ones that said, why singing them songs when you could be singing oil, making millions before too long? So just to take my word that I can handle the heat, just a promise in the end, it won't be in the trucker's seat.
Skinnered in the guitar tone, hey? That's ex-trucker Tyson Ray Boorspoon with Trucker Seat. Now back to the conclusion of our wake-up call. You said that music, one of the things that music taught you is that things that seem out of reach are indeed attainable. And it feels to me like you're living that. You're going after that.
I'm definitely trying. I'm trying my very best.
Well, Tyson, your new album these days comes out June 5th. You'll be in the middle of a massive 30-day tour at that point.
Yeah.
You said earlier that you love songwriting, but you really love being on stage. You must be thrilled this upcoming.
Yeah.
We are chatting on the 23rd of April. Are you when do you start these shows?
Yeah, the shows start on the 13th of May.
Okay.
And then I'm really hoping, fingers crossed, haven't started any booking yet, but I'm going to try to see if I can get some dates out east. I've really been trying to get out to the Toronto, Montreal area for a long time. And
you got
to
get further east than that, my man.
I know. I've literally never been to the East Coast, and it makes me so, so sad.
You got friends out there.
I do. And I do want to come see everybody. So I'm going to do my very best.
Let's enjoy the highs and weather the lows. Tyson Ray Boorspoon, it's been so great to meet you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, dude.
See ya.
Yeah, thanks, man.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode of When We Wake. Big, big thanks to my guest, Tyson Ray Boorspoon. His new album, These Days, is due June 5th, and he hits the road on a mega major tour out west. 30 dates starting May 13th. TysonRayBorsBoom.com. That's B-O-R-S-B-O-O-M. For more info, or at TysonRayBorsBoom on Instagram. I'm at The Andrew Shaver. Our theme song is Got You by my pal and yours, Noah Reed. Thanks for listening.
World's in the climb, it's getting hard to stay on fire. Acting out of line so I can try to ease my mind. Happens all the time, I tell myself a soothing lie. Live in the hurricane, stares me in the eye. Take time, open your mind, ask yourself why.